In 2019, Governor Mike DeWine introduced his H2 Ohio Water Quality Initiative. This plan, which farmers in Northwest Ohio, the Maumee River watershed, were able to sign up for earlier this year, is an investment in targeted solutions to help reduce phosphorus runoff and prevent algal blooms through a number of ways, including increased implementation of agricultural best management practices, creation of wetlands, improvement of wastewater infrastructure, and replacing failing home septic systems. Despite a global pandemic, the rollout of H2 Ohio began earlier this year. On today's Our Ohio Weekly, find out how the initial rollout went and what the next year looks like for the program.
From the Ohio Farm Bureau Studio, this is Our Ohio Weekly, highlighting those who grow our food, fiber, and fuel, while examining issues that are important for farmers and their neighbors throughout the Buckeye State. Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Here's Our Ohio Weekly host, Ty Higgins.
Earlier this year, details were laid out for farmers in the Maumee River watershed who wanted to participate in the H2 Ohio initiative. According to Dorothy Palanda, director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture, interest in the program was very high from day one.
The participation and the commitment of almost 2,000 producers in these 14 counties was more than anyone could have anticipated. But their commitment to voluntary conservation is something that we are most pleased and proud of. The program now, through the producers' commitment there, encompasses almost 1.2 million acres of voluntary nutrient management plans and represents about 43% of the total cropland in those 14 counties. Beginning in October of this year, upon verification that the producers were actually doing what they'd committed to do, payouts for those practices began and will continue through next spring. Even at the same time, while we are now engaged in a program of having the farmers sign an acknowledgement that they will be participating in these same practices for the ensuing second and third year.
But will the funding be there for the long term? Director Palanda says the recent bills passed by the House and Senate in Columbus show the commitment from Ohio's legislature for H2 Ohio matches that of farmers.
I think those actions by both the House and Senate indicate a commitment on behalf of the legislature to the H2 Ohio program, and we're really excited about it and continue to look and watch what the legislature does in terms of that commitment. I think the most important thing is the building and sustaining of relationships that we have with the legislature to keep them informed. They will all receive a copy of the full H2 Ohio report, and following that, we will engage in conversations with our partners at the legislature to help answer any questions they have and to also demonstrate our passion and our commitment in moving forward with this program.
Let's get the latest on H2 Ohio from Janelle Mead, CEO of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and Chris Schwartz. He farms in Wood County. He's the past president of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts and currently serves as the chairman of the newly formed Ohio Agriculture Conservation Initiative. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ty.
Thanks for having us, Ty.
Janelle, we recently got some pretty good news about H2 Ohio as far as looking to the future. What can you tell us?
Yeah, we just found out that the department had requested some additional funds through the controlling board that will go into farmer practices up there in the Western Lake Erie District, up in those 14 districts that are currently in H2 Ohio. And it'll give farmers the opportunity to put some practices on their fields. And we're just really excited about that.
We'll talk more about those practices in just a bit. But Chris, what does it mean to receive not just this first round of funding, but now we have year two funding coming? What does that speak to as far as not just the administration, but how important water quality is for Ohio?
Well, you know, obviously these are kind of tumultuous financial times for the state. You know, it shows a real commitment to the dedication to improve water quality. I'm excited, you know, from a farmer perspective, and a retailer perspective and a soil and water employee's perspective, because there was a time there where we thought we were doing a lot of work for a one-year program. So I think this is going to, there's a certainty that we're going to have year two of the program. I got to believe that makes year three a foregone conclusion too. So all the hard work our technicians and crop consultants and farmers are doing and all the nutrient management plans are going to have a benefit over 3 years versus the possibility of just being a one and done. So I think it's a wonderful thing.
Janelle, it also speaks to the excitement that was rolled out when H2 Ohio was introduced. We had a lot of farmers in Northwest Ohio that were not just curious about the program, but really wanted to get involved.
Absolutely. I think we saw record turnout in the meetings that we held last winter from farmers, farmers that really maybe hadn't been in the door of a soil and water district office before, farmers who are really excited to come to the table to learn what they could do to improve water quality up in their area. And just a ton of new farmers that we were really excited to see show up at these meetings and then follow through. You know, it wasn't just that they came and learned a little bit about it, but they took the time to sit down with their soil and water district staff and to learn what practices would be best on their farm, to fill out those applications and to start working on nutrient management plans and planning those practices on their farm fields.
So then begs the question, is there enough funding to keep up with the interest?
Ty, I think there is. You know, we had a tremendous sign up for all 4 years. We got it delayed because of the pandemic, but certainly we have enough funding for year one and year two with the requests. I think the challenge for guys is right now to fulfill on all the plans they made, because, you know, it's easy to say, I'm going to do all these things, you know, out of season. Once the weather hits and Mother Nature goes against you, it's harder to get them done. But I think farmers have the real intent to fulfill all their obligations on this program.
Farmers, of course, have a lot of work ahead of them. But Janelle, many of the people that work for Ohio Soil and Water Conservation Districts do a lot of hard work as well. What happens on your side of things as far as H2 Ohio and getting farmers involved?
You know, I think fortunately we have some great technicians up in that Western Lake Erie Basin and just really a lot of great staff that's up there. You know, they get to know the farmer, they get to know the farming operation, and sit down and talk about what that farmer can really do to improve water quality. They have a lot of technical expertise and can really help that farmer sit down and figure out those plans. There's a lot of work in writing a nutrient management plan, a lot of work in helping farmers to understand what's actually happening on their farm fields and how these different improvements can make a difference. So there's a lot of training, a lot of education, and just a lot of great relationships with the farmers.
Nutrient management plans, Chris, are a huge component of these first couple of years for these farmers to set those plans and put them in place. And for those that don't know, what does a nutrient management plan look like?
Well, you know, a nutrient management plan, basically, you have to start with a soil test. You need a current soil test to tell you what the readings in your every acre are on your farm right now. After that, you look at what your crop rotation is going to be, what kind of nutrients those crops are going to require. And then you make a plan. You know, you say, I have X amount in the soil. I need X amount for the crop. This is what I'm going to apply in the next year or two and try to time it out. They're tedious to go through. I mean, they're very detailed and they take a lot of time. I think the encouraging thing to me is farmers are looking and learning way more about soil tests and fertility recommendations. And, you know, they're not just turning it over to their retailer. They're taking some more ownership of it. And I think that educational part is huge in this whole effort.
Chris Schwartz is past president of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. He currently serves as chairman of the Ohio Agriculture Conservation Initiative. He's also a farmer in Wood County. Janelle Mead joins us this week as well. She's CEO of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Another component that is a pretty big deal is the creation of the Ohio Agriculture Conservation Initiative. And Chris, you and I were in the same room about a year and a half ago where we sat at the table with industries and organizations that we probably wouldn't have 5 years ago. When you talk about some of the environmental groups, and we have academia involved, all the commodity groups for agriculture, it really is an eclectic mix of people and ideas that came together for this coalition. And the certification process into OACI is actually tied into H2 Ohio. How is that and why is that?
First of all, I'm going to say, you know, the coalition we have built in Ohio is truly unique. You know, I talked to my counterparts from Illinois or Iowa, and they are astounded that we sit at the same table with some of the environmental partners who those guys out there are battling with and fighting with. And I got to give it to our environmental community that they've really reached across the fence and said, hey, how can we help you? And are not telling us how we should do things. The certification part, you know, we want to tell farmers stories. We want to get out there because we think the untold story is how many farmers are doing really good things. We get the negative press all the time. The certification is going to allow us to highlight that, you know, the majority of farmers in Ohio are doing a wonderful job on water quality issues. So that's why it's important for all our farmers to embrace the platform and the certification. We're not trying to throw mud on any farmer. We're trying to put some sunshine on them and spotlight the guys that are really doing good things. And, you know, we may find some people that need a little help here and there, and that's great too. We're not trying to throw them under the bus. We're trying to give them a helping hand.
What information are you looking for when you ask farmers, and this is for farmers all over Ohio, not just Northwest Ohio, what are you asking for when they either go on to the website or go on to the app to put their information in?
We are really just asking what their conservation practices are now. And if you're doing, you know, how you're putting your fertilizer on, if you're following the tri-state, we are not asking anything very really detailed. We're not asking you what your yields are. We're not asking you what your soil test levels, that's your information and we don't want it. We just want to know that, hey, I'm looking at my yield goals, or I'm looking at my soil tests, and I'm making the appropriate decision on my fertility levels. As long as you can tell us that, we're happy. We don't want to know anything private or proprietary to any farm. We are against that all the way around. And I think people should know that we're not in that business. We don't want to get into their details of that farm.
All this focus has been on Northwest Ohio, in particular the 14 Maumee River watershed counties. But OACI's certification program is statewide. Why should farmers outside of those 14 counties get enrolled?
Well, I think the thing is, like I said, we want to tell the farms good stories. You know, obviously the spotlight is on Northwest Ohio, and how we deal with our water quality issues here are going to reflect across all of Ohio. If we fail here, it's not a good sign for the rest of agriculture in Ohio. But we want to pre-tell those stories in Central Ohio and West Central Ohio and Southeast Ohio of what farmers are doing and how they're making a difference in their environment now. So I think farmers, we don't tell our story often enough. We say, hey, we're going to go mind our own business. We're doing our work, and everybody can just go on their way. But we need to tell what's going on and how it's going on.
Janelle, how can our listeners find out more about H2 Ohio?
Well, for H2 Ohio, you can check out the department's website on the ODA page. But we'd also like to encourage people to go check out the OACI page on the website at ohioaci.org. And also to download that app that's on Google Play and in the App Store, so they can go ahead and enroll in OACI and start that process of figuring out where they are on that conservation ladder and what practices might help them out. And, you know, I think Chris did a great job explaining why farmers would want to get engaged and tell a little bit about what's going on in their farm. Farmers for many years have put in conservation practices without any type of government assistance. And we really have no record of the great things that they are doing on their farm. And this helps us to kind of have them think about the practices that they've been putting on their farms over the years and kind of make a record of that. So I would encourage people to check out H2 Ohio and the Ohio Ag Conservation Initiative.
Janelle Mead is CEO of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and Chris Schwartz farms in Wood County, past president of the Ohio Federation of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, and currently serves as chairman of the aforementioned Ohio Agriculture Conservation Initiative. I appreciate you both being with us, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ty.
Thanks, Ty.
If you're putting conservation practices on your farm and want to tell other farmers about it, there's a new program just for you. I'll tell you more about it after this on Our Ohio Weekly.
Are you a small business owner supporting agriculture, such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, and a variety of plans designed to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
Here in Ohio, we grow possibilities. By investing in the Soybean Checkoff, farmers can concentrate on running their operations, while the Ohio Soybean Council creates new opportunities for future generations. The Soybean Checkoff works to get new soy-based products on the market, builds relationships with international buyers, and partners with researchers to increase yield and on-farm profitability. Learn more at soyohio.org/herewegrow. This message brought to you by Ohio Soybean Farmers and their Checkoff.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
With over 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA members and Ohio agriculture is undeniable. Farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn, those amazingly fast four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Stick around. Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues following these messages.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. The Nature Conservancy, looking for farmers who are currently utilizing cover crops on their farms in the Maumee River watershed of the Western Lake Erie Basin. They are putting together a program searching out farmers for a $900,000 farmer-led conservation project. Joining us to talk more about it is Stephanie Singer. She's with the Nature Conservancy. And Jeff Dooling is a farmer in Putnam County, part of the program as well. Thank you both for being with us this week.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Stephanie, we'll start with you. Just kind of give me an overview of how this program came to be and its goal.
We are very excited about this program. Our partners are American Farmland Trust, National Wildlife Federation, the Farm Bureau, and also Ohio State University. The program is really designed to have farmers learn from each other. So we know that there are a lot of farmers in our watersheds doing a lot of really great things for soil health and for water quality. We want to elevate the voices of those farmers and have them be heard by other farmers who are interested in these types of practices. So what's involved, if you are a farmer who is interested in sharing what you're doing on your farm with other farmers, you can apply to be a farmer advocate for conservation. You will then, if you're accepted, you will go through a 36-hour training. It will be all virtual for the first time around here. So that will be really fun and interesting. We're trying to make it fun. We're disappointed it had to be virtual, but we also know that people, you know, can do it from the comfort of their own home and they won't have to travel. So that's a good thing. So that 36-hour training will really just be getting the farmer to think about what they're doing on their farm and how they could communicate that best with other farmers. And after they're done with their training, they will be able to go out into their community and talk to other farmers about the practices that they're doing.
And Jeff Dooling, I know that you are going to be a farmer advocate for conservation. You really already are. I follow you on social media, and you put out there what you're doing on your farm, but other people may not know. So tell me about your farm, first of all, and some of the things that you do that may not be what many of your neighbors do as far as conservation goes.
Well, we farm here in Putnam County and a few surrounding counties. Farm with my parents, had some brothers farm with me, and I got my son and my wife and daughter's help. So I strived like this year to have everything under cover. I mean, by cover, I mean, it's either in wheat or it's in cereal rye or it's some kind of cover crop, because I just cannot tolerate seeing bare ground and seeing – water laying on my fields. I don't tolerate that very well. So that's kind of unorthodox in my neighborhood here, because if you would climb up on my grain leg right now and look around, you'd see a lot of green around my place, but then further out, it's a lot of bare ground. So that bothers me a little bit. So we've been doing this for years, but I don't know how I can get any of my neighbors to pick this up, I guess. I mean, they all want to talk about yields. That's all they strive is about yields. Well, I get yields too, and it pays my bills, but I'm looking at the long term down the road, what my quality of soil is. I mean, you walk across my fields, it feels like walking in the woods, you know, just so loamy. You walk across the road and the neighbors, and it's hard, you know, so you see these things that, you know, so I don't know how. That's why hopefully this training will teach me how to talk to my neighbors a little better, I guess. I mean, I love to talk, but.
Well, you know, we've seen an upswing in cover crops over the last 5-6 years, and obviously we are seeing more farmers do what you do, maybe not on the scale that you do it, but testing the waters. Are you seeing that in your county, in Putnam County and surrounding counties as well? Are more farmers at least thinking about the process?
Yeah, there's, you know, these programs out here that they're getting some money to try it. But the problem with cover crops is, in no-till, you got to stay at it. You know, it's just not a one-year wonder. You know, it's 3 to 4 to 5 years, you know. And just like this year, I picked up some different ground that's been, you know, been tillage for forever. So I want to see how long it takes me to get it up to my standards. So, you know, so I'm working with some other companies to measure this, I guess, how you want to say it, measure it by field, see if we are making any money or how fast we can make money on these fields.
Stephanie, Jeff is just a great advocate, not just for this project, but for agriculture in Ohio as a whole. So you're looking for more farmers just like him. And I mentioned this is a $900,000 farmer-led conservation project. Where are those funds coming from and what will they be utilized for?
Okay, the funds are from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. It's a grant that we have. Most of the funds will be to pay the farmers to attend the training and then to pay them to do outreach. We know that their time is valuable and we're all paid to do our job. And we know that there's farmers like Jeff who are already out there telling their story, and we want to compensate them for that work that they're doing. And we do hope that the training will help them be able to tell their story, talk about their return on investment for some of these practices, because we know that, you know, it might not all be about the yield, but about their profit.
So if there's a farmer out there listening now and they want to get involved and find out how to be an advocate for conservation, how can they go about finding out more?
Okay, you can go to this site. It's a Google site where you can fill out a nomination form or an application. It's sites.google.com/view/farmer-advocate. And I'm not sure if you have a way to display that somewhere, but it might be easier for someone to just click on a link.
Yeah, we certainly will. If you go to the podcast page at ofbf.org, we'll have the link there under the Our Ohio Weekly tab, and you can find it there and get the link directly to that Google site and get signed up to be a farmer advocate for conservation. Stephanie Singer is with the Nature Conservancy. Jeff Dooling farms in Putnam County. Really appreciate you taking time to visit with us, and hopefully we'll get as many farmers as we can signed up for the program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ty.
Coming up as Our Ohio Weekly continues, a tragic story that turns into a program to help save lives all across Ohio. Plus, I visit with Leah Curtis, Policy Counsel with Ohio Farm Bureau. We talk about what liabilities landowners have if trespassers are injured on their property. Details on that coming up later this hour on Our Ohio Weekly. This is Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. John Fullenkamp's life was cut short due to a distracted driver. His wife, Leah, today honors her husband's memory through an organization called In the Blink of a Fly. This tragic but important story is this week's To the Beat of Agriculture.
Leah Fullenkamp. I was an elementary teacher for 14 years. Now I stay home with my 4 kids and I run In the Blink of a Fly. So I met John when I was a sophomore in high school. I was only 15 and he was 17. And he grew up on a farm, I grew up on a farm, and it was always our dream to raise our kids in that lifestyle. So he helped his parents farm, and we were just in the process of starting that ourselves. He definitely had the dry sense of humor, loved farming a lot. That was his passion that he did during the night and then the weekend. Super good dad. He was very hands-on and involved with all of our kids. We had four kids together, Eliza, Henry, Molly, and Greta. He was one of those people that any problem there was, he could solve it. But during high school, my car leaked water whenever it rained. So I remember him drilling holes in the floorboard to get the water out. If there was something that needed fixed, we almost never called people in to fix it. He would research and figure out how to do it and learn how to do it and develop those skills to fix it on his own. Just the attitude of, all right, what do I need to learn to make this work? And then he did it. I think it's just that perseverance that if things don't go your way, you're going to keep on trucking along and figure out how to make it work. June of 2018, and I had just finished the school year, and I'd been having a lot of trouble with my foot, mostly that it would give out when I was on the stairs. And John said, you know, you need to get this fixed because you're going to be carrying one of the kids. Your foot's going to give out, and you're going to fall, and you're never going to forgive yourself. And I'm like, okay. So I went and got actually pretty major foot surgery done the day before. So that was a Friday night. And then that Saturday, he cut hay in the morning, and then he went to my dad's farm that we had just recently purchased and was spraying. And I was still at home. Couldn't walk because we just had the surgery, and we had our little kids with me. They were tiny at the time. And I was home and just kind of laying, sleeping. And then I saw it on Facebook that there was a really bad accident right by Dad's house. And so I called John, and he didn't answer. And I didn't think much of it because, you know, when you're on the tractor, sometimes you don't hear it. Or if he leaves his phone in the tractor and he's filling up the sprayer, didn't think much of it at first. And then I called him again like 15 minutes later and nothing. And then I started calling all of my dad's neighbors, and the ones that knew that it had happened just didn't answer. The ones that didn't know what was going on picked up and told me they would call me back, but they never called me back. And this was like at 4 o'clock when I first read about it. And then around 7 is when my mother-in-law came over, which she had came to the crash and had the roadblock, so you couldn't get to my dad's house. So she went to one of my uncle's house. My uncle and my mother-in-law went to walk to my dad's house to figure out what was going on, and that's when they realized that it was John. I would say the oldest definitely understood, but the younger three, I mean, the six-year-old kind of did, and the baby was obviously oblivious. The oldest went and started grabbing all of his things and hid it under his bed for memories. 3 weeks later, the sheriff's department came and gave us a copy of the police report, and that's when I learned that she was shopping online when it happened. I don't know what hell's like, but I can't imagine it much worse than that. After John's crash, we would have a fly that would come visit us. And it's not just a normal, like, it's not a normal fly. It'd be a fly that you would land on your hand, and you could pass it from person to person. It would show up on days, like it showed up on Christmas or it showed up on birthdays. Just things like that, that it would come, and it's there. My kids can put it on their hand and ride their bike, and it'll stay on their arm. It's not like a normal fly. And that's kind of how we came up with the name of the organization, that your life can really change in the blink of an eye. Like, I had a completely different life in less than 24 hours. And it wasn't because of anything that I did or didn't do. So just how quickly everything can change in the blink of a fly. So we have a Facebook page. We also have Instagram. And we have a website, and it's just intheblinkofafly.com. We definitely try really hard to keep his memory alive, and I think that you would appreciate that. I don't know that he would appreciate that I share as much as I do about him, but he might, just to prevent it from somebody else. It's such a tragedy because he was such a good guy. His character trait is that, you know, you do what you can to survive. And this is what we're doing to make it survivable.
Learn more about today's story at intheblinkofafly.com. That's intheblinkofafly.com. I'm Ty Higgins, back in a moment on Our Ohio Weekly.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
For many, the COVID-19 crisis made it feel like the world stopped. But for Ohio Farm Bureau and our members, the work never did. As you spend early mornings in the barn and late nights in the field, Ohio Farm Bureau continues to be at the forefront, advocating and educating to help our members navigate through these challenges. Ohio's resilient agriculture community will get through this with the strength of the state's largest farm organization. Get updates and become a member at ofbf.org/stillfarming. Ohio Farm Bureau, together with farmers.
Ohio Farm Bureau is proud to announce its new partnership with the Ford Motor Company. And it's good news for Farm Bureau members. Members get $500 in bonus cash on eligible new Ford cars and trucks, or $750 in bonus cash on eligible Lincoln vehicles. Not a member? Well, join now and in 30 days, you're eligible. For complete information on program details, visit ofbf.org.
Have you heard about the Ohio Farm Bureau Energy Program? Eligible members are saving an average of 15% on their electric and natural gas bills. The program works through a network of suppliers to secure cost-saving pricing in competitive electric and natural gas regions. We've heard from members who've saved hundreds of dollars annually on their energy costs. Getting started is easy. Simply call the Energy Program customer service line, 800-830-3501, and our representative will assist you from there, 800-830-3501. You can also visit ofbf.org/savings to learn more.
Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins continues after this.
Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. There are quite a few advantages of being a landowner, including tax deductions, return on your investment, potential borrowing power. But owning land also comes with some possible liability. That's what we're covering on this Legal with Leah. Leah Curtis is Ohio Farm Bureau's policy counsel. And Leah, the obvious landowner liability question that comes to mind that you've actually received recently is, if someone's on your land that shouldn't be and they get hurt while trespassing, who would be at fault and could the landowner be sued?
Yeah, so I'll answer the easy part of that question first. A landowner can always be sued in that situation. Really, anybody can get sued for anything at any time. Be it valid or ridiculous. And, you know, the court system is there to sort out, you know, what's a real complaint and what's not. So that's always a possibility and one to always consider. As far as, you know, would the landowner be liable? That's where we get to the it depends situation. Generally, the law says that a landowner does not owe a duty of care to a trespasser. So you don't have to take any special action to protect a trespasser. When a court is looking at whether there's liability or not, they are going to look at kind of the whole situation, what happened, how did it happen, what was going on around it, and then they'll determine, you know, whether there was liability or not. But generally, we don't have a liability as landowners to trespassers who get harmed on our land.
So what can landowners do to give themselves some protection against liability?
Things that landowners can do are some of the same things that they would do to protect their own family or guests or service people who might be on their property. You know, no trespassing signs are always a great start. That way people know they're not where they should be. They're not required, you know, to have somebody found as a trespasser, but they just help. It's just one more thing that helps. And then what is the actual risk? You know, is the risk somebody's going to fall into a hole or something? So, you know, can we park equipment so that that hole is not as accessible? Can we put a flag around it? You know, if it's something that's temporary, can we put a temporary warning sign there? You know, what are kind of those low cost things that we could do to just prevent anyone from getting hurt? You know, that's just even extra more protection when it comes to a trespasser.
I've also heard over in the last year that there's some maybe rules or legislation coming out that involves a can of spray paint and a little bit of walking around the property.
Yeah, so there is a bill in the legislature. It's kind of generally called the Purple Paint Law. And what it says is that, you know, following a set of requirements, if you paint using purple paint onto trees or fence posts or whatever's out there in the natural landscape, those can serve as indicators of basically of the property line and of no trespassing. And so, you know, there's a certain size, certain amount. But it's just one more tool. It's you know, probably a little easier than trespassing signs that disintegrate and fall down. And it would just be one more way for people who, you know, maybe even have no intention of trespassing, but they don't realize like, oh, well, when I went past that, you know, maple tree, I just crossed onto somebody else's land. Well, now that purple paint notification can kind of serve to say to them, you're now entering into somebody else's property. So just one more tool in the toolbox for landowners to kind of mark their boundary lines and let people know where those lines are.
I'm going to throw you a curveball. Something that just popped into my head is that deer season, gun season, hunting season is going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. Let's say that you give someone permission to come onto your property and God forbid something happens where someone gets injured. Who's liable then?
So again, it's going to depend on a lot of different factors, you know, including who it is that actually got hurt. But, you know, generally when you give people permission to be on your land for a recreational purpose, including hunting, and typically that would be without any kind of exchange of money. So they're not paying you for that access. You're just allowing them. There's a special law that says the landowner is not liable for injuries that occur to that person. It generally also, you know, would be the person who actually shot someone or actually hurt someone that would be the one that's liable. So you as a landowner wouldn't have much of a duty to that hunter that you gave permission to. And if that hunter injured somebody else, then it's going to be likely that hunter's possible liability, not the landowner's.
Of course, there are all kinds of questions that landowners have, and there's a great resource we have at Ohio Farm Bureau to help them out. Tell us about the Landowner Toolkit.
Yeah, so our Landowner Toolkit is an expansive guide. It covers pretty much all of the hot topics that we get questions about all the time. So things like trespassing, like drainage, like zoning, open burning is a favorite. So it's this whole guide for all of these topics that you as a landowner may just have kind of random questions about. And it gives you the background and the overview of all those areas. So with trespassing, we talk about who do you have a duty of care to? You know, what's your care to your social guests, your business people that might come on your land? And what do you need to do to kind of prevent liability, or what are steps you should take? And then what are other important protections that you have as a landowner, like with hunters, like with agritourism liability, and how those factor into that calculus as well, to just kind of help you give a better picture of all those different aspects of being a landowner that can kind of be a legal issue for you.
That's Leah Curtis, Policy Counsel with Ohio Farm Bureau. You can find out more about that Landowner Toolkit online at ofbf.org. Just search Landowner Toolkit. Leah and I talk more about landowner liability after this on Our Ohio Weekly. We often hear about farm succession planning and immediately think of wills and trusts. But using business entities in your succession plan is equally important. Robert Moore is an attorney with Wright & Moore. And Robert, what are some of the key things to keep in mind when making business entities a part of the overall succession plan?
Well, we often think about business entities, particularly LLCs, as a way to manage liability. And they do a good job of that. But when we do farm succession planning, we find entities to be very valuable. And one of the really important things the LLCs do is help us protect family farmland. Let's say that mom and dad have the estate plan where all the farmland goes to son and daughter. It just goes to them outright in their names. The risk there is that Ohio has what's called partition, that either owner can force the sale of the land as long as their name's on the deed. So just having what we call co-tenancy, co-ownership of the land, puts that land at risk.
You need to consider starting the next generation into ownership of the farming operation as well.
It's always important to do that, but business entities also make that an easier transaction. So when you bring the next generation into the farming operation, when you say, well, you buy half the corn planter and I'll trade the tractor in, and you know, it gets a little messy on that end. So what we prefer to do is put the farming operation in an LLC, and then you can transition ownership by saying, okay, I'm going to give you 10% this year. I'm going to give you 10% next year. We can transfer ownership in that farm operation and make it completely private. So LLCs make that transition of ownership much easier.
Robert Moore is an attorney with Wright and Moore. They focus their efforts on providing legal counsel to farmers and landowners in Ohio. Visit them online at ohiofarmlaw.com. That's ohiofarmlaw.com. More Our Ohio Weekly after this.
Are you a small business owner supporting and involved with agriculture such as farm equipment, food processing, grocery store, or restaurant service? Do you continue to search for reliable and affordable health coverage? Then search no more. The Ohio Farm Bureau has taken action to offer a new self-funded medical plan to save on expenses. This new health benefits plan, administered in part by Medical Mutual, offers great rates, expanded well care, fixed monthly payments, and a variety of plan designs to meet your needs. Specialty products available to employees include dental, vision, and disability at specially discounted rates. This plan also includes a 24/7 nurse line and a physician consultation service for your convenience. Search no more. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org. Receive your exceptionally discounted quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
At Georgia Boot, we build our boots just like the people who wear them. Tough, dependable, and hardworking. You need a boot that you can count on. That's why Georgia Boot always uses rich, full-grain leathers and comfort insoles to maximize your all-day comfort. We've been building boots that way since 1937. You pick the best tools for the job. Why would your boots be any different? Georgia Boot is America's hardest-working boot. Go to georgiaboot.com to see our latest promotions or to find a dealer near you.
More of Our Ohio Weekly with Ty Higgins next.
Thank you for listening to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins. In our last segment, I talked with Leah Curtis, Policy Counsel with Ohio Farm Bureau, about landowner liability. And she mentioned that in rare cases, landowners can be liable for accidents happening to trespassers. Want to cover that a little bit more extensively. You mentioned those few instances, and one of those is called intentional or wantingly reckless conduct, otherwise known as man-made death traps. First of all, give us some examples, if you would, and why they're a bad idea.
Sure. So we want to be clear that if you intentionally harm somebody who's trespassing on your property, it's very likely you'll be held liable for their injuries. So that's why it's important that we always involve the authorities, calling the sheriff, the local police, if there's somebody trespassing. As far as man-made death traps, those are things that are just so likely to result in harm or serious injury that it's just irrationally reckless to let them continue on the property or in the place. So the textbook example in law school that you learn about is a spring-loaded gun attached to the door of a cabin. Obviously, it ended up harming somebody who was trespassing, and they were not there under good intentions, but it also would have definitely harmed and seriously harmed anyone who was there under legal reasons. You know, if the police had come to do a check or, someone had just knocked on the door and somehow mistakenly got that door jiggled enough that it set that off, it could have harmed them. So things that are just so irrationally dangerous, it's so likely to result in very serious harm. That's where the court will say you may still be liable even though it was a trespasser. It's not very common, but I always want to make sure we point it out.
And there are those that trespass knowing darn well what they're doing. And there are those that trespass that don't have any intentions of doing harm and maybe just simply don't know they're trespassing. And that would be children that happen to wander onto our properties. Attractive nuisance is the second example we have for this Legal with Leah. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so an attractive nuisance is basically something that's an artificial condition of the land that is dangerous, but it's attractive to children. And a really good example of this is swimming pools, particularly one that's open that children can get into. You know, no, but everybody knows every child loves to go swimming and they just want to get in that pool. And we know how dangerous they can be. So under Ohio law and in most states, landowners can be held liable for an attractive nuisance that results in injuries to a child trespasser. The court always looks at this as a case-by-case scenario. So it's not like because you have it, you're going to be liable for injuries. But the court will ask, you know, is the child likely to understand that they are trespassing? Are they likely to understand the danger that is there? Does the landowner know that children are likely to trespass or possible to trespass? Is there an increased need for that condition to exist versus the burden of eliminating it and making it more safe? And then did the landowner exercise what we call reasonable care? Did they take any care to try to eliminate that danger or limit the danger, particularly related to children and trespassers?
Yeah, talking a lot about the kids in this particular one, but this also extends to adults.
Yes. Yeah, so if an adult would be injured in the course of attempting to rescue a child, our courts and our law has said that you can extend that attractive nuisance protection to that trespassing adult. So, for example, if an adult was trying to get a child out of a pool that they were drowning in, that they had trespassed, that attractive nuisance may also apply to the adult in that case.
Anything exempt from this? I know a lot of kids like to see the farm animals, or they like to go and find out what's happening maybe on the other side of the hill. What might not take precedent here?
That's really important about the attractive nuisance definition. You notice I said it was an artificial condition, so it can't be something that's a natural feature. And our courts have extended that to include things like animals. So farm animals, horses, cows, that kind of thing, those are considered to be natural and therefore are not attractive nuisances versus the artificial conditions that we talked about.
And you can be proactive as a landowner and maybe be upfront about what's happening on the farm and tell families down the road what to expect and what not to do.
Yeah, I mean, these cases are rare, and it is rare to see liability found even when they are brought. But it's just like we talked about the last time, that ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, you know, making sure things are put away so that, you know, keys aren't left in machinery where people could get to them, that there are fences, that there's no trespassing or danger signs. And then, like you said, just talking with your neighbors, particularly if they have small children, and making sure that the parents and the children understand it may not be safe for you to just come onto our property. If you want to come onto our property, come and talk to us, and let's talk about a safe time to do that.
Leah Curtis is policy counsel with Ohio Farm Bureau. She covers a lot of different aspects of the legal challenges in agriculture and rural Ohio. You can listen to her podcast online now at ofbf.org.
Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side and produced by Ohio Farm Bureau. Working together for Ohio farmers to advance agriculture and strengthen our communities. Be sure to visit Our Ohio Weekly's podcast page to listen to previous episodes at ofbf.org/Our Ohio Weekly.
From all of us at Ohio Farm Bureau, Merry Christmas. I'm Ty Higgins. We'll see you down the road.